welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levernier. Coming up in this hour, crime stories. We'll hear the newspaper drama The Fourth Estate later on, but right now it's The Man from Homicide. The last known surviving broadcast of the series next, from July 16, 1951, with Barney Phillips, Bill Boucher, Dan Duryea, and Dick Powell from ABC.
The Man from Homicide. According to Webster's Dictionary, homicide is the killing of one human being by another. According to Lieutenant Lou Dana,
it's the beginning of a dirty, dangerous job that doesn't end until the killer is found.
I don't like killers.
Every week at this time, the American Broadcasting Company brings you transcribed the star of stage and screen, Dan Duryea, as Lieutenant Lou Dana, the man from Homicide.
Most men spend their lives building walls around themselves. Money, social position, land. And the man with many walls may seem to be different from the man who sells pencils on the corner. But sudden death knows no walls. And when they look into its face, all men are pretty much alike. I know. What's up, Inspector?
Something hot, Lou. Just took a call from old man Kelso. He's scared. Scared to death, Lou.
What's he got to be scared of? Falling off his money?
Claims someone is threatening to kill him.
Stick a gum, Inspector?
Huh? Oh, no. He asked for you, Lou, right away.
Yeah.
Well, you better get on it, Lou.
Inspector, what happens if we get a call from a fruit peddler who thinks someone is trying to kill him?
Oh, I know, Lou, I know.
We ignore it 9 chances out of 10. Why is this so different?
He sounded really scared, Lou, for one reason. And, well, you know the other.
$9 million. And I bet he can't sleep nights thinking how to make it 10.
Better get out there, Lou.
Sure. I'll go out and hold Kelso's hand, and maybe some of what he's got will rub off on me. The Kelso butler and I exchanged chilled greetings before he consented to guide me to Mr. Kelso's room. The 50-cent tour through a mausoleum. He announced me, left, and I was face to face with $9 million.
Come in, Lieutenant Dana, come in. Sit down. Thank you for coming so promptly, Dana. I won't forget it. I still have one or two friends left, you know. I won't forget it.
Somebody's been threatening you, Mr. Kelso?
Has he been threatening me? Tell me a better word for it, Dana. Tell me a better word for it when a man announces openly, brazenly, over a period of weeks, that he intends to kill me.
All right, Mr. Kelso. What's his name?
There will be no publicity concerning this, Dana.
Not unless he carries out his threat.
What? Oh, yes. Well, his name is Farley, Dana. Stephen Farley. The name should be familiar to you.
Vaguely. Small-time hood, I think. I haven't heard anything of him in a couple of years.
Small wonder. I've been supporting him lavishly.
Any particular reason?
Farley has a sister, Vivian, formerly a singer.
Oh, I remember now. And Vivian is...
Mrs. Kelso. We were married quietly 2 years ago.
Lucky you. I remember.
It's because of Vivian that I haven't gone to the police before now. But, he means it, Dana. He means to kill me.
All right, if he made threats, we'll pull him in.
I'm afraid it's not quite that easy. He has not openly promised murder in front of witnesses. He's too clever for that.
What has he done?
To me, he has implied repeatedly that I must be suffering, that death will be such a happy relief, that while Vivian and he will hate to see me go, they're willing to face it for my sake. He goes on like that repeatedly.
Mr. Kelso, I'm from the homicide squad. If you've got a nasty brother-in-law, I'm sorry for you. But sympathy is about all I can give you.
Lieutenant Dana, no, wait. What do you call this, if not overt evidence of intent to murder? 2 days ago, Farley took an option on an expensive home with the down payment to be made in 2 weeks, when he says he expects to come into a great sum of money. 2 weeks!
Anything else?
No, certainly. He took an option on a yacht in the same manner, ordered expensive clothes. Even consulted a mortician about funeral arrangements. I ask you, Tina, for the taxes I pay, I'm not entitled to protection from a thing like this. Am I to be murdered in my own bed with no one turning a hand to save me? What's this country coming to?
I'll look into it, Mr. Kelso. Where's Stephen Farley living?
Gramercy Apartments on South Garden. I've maintained a residence for him, supported him, given him a car, and now...
I'll look into it. Wife around, Mr. Kelso?
I believe Vivian is in the pool. Right,
sir? I'll find it.
What have I worked for all my life? What security have I obtained? What...
Mr. Kelso, tell me. What's it like to have $9 million?
It's not what you'd expect, Tina. It's not what you'd expect at all.
Mr. Kelso was shivering in the warmth of the day as I left him. And on guard outside his door was an empty suit of armor with a spear. A multimillionaire defended only by a tin soldier. I found the pool, and arching off the board in a front jackknife was Vivian. I wanted her to come up and out of the water fast so I could see if it was true.
Hi.
It was.
Oh, water's wonderful today. You want to join us?
Almost any other time, Mrs. Kelso. Lieutenant Lou Dana, Homicide Squad.
Oh, you looking for my husband, Lieutenant Dana?
I've seen him.
Didn't believe him, I hope. Oh, this is Gordon Elliott, my husband's business manager.
Oh, how are you, Dana? Excuse my wet hand.
Sure. Just don't drip on my suit.
Dana, believe me, I'm sorry you had this trip out here for nothing. I tried to stop Mr. Kelso from phoning the police.
It's all right. I don't mind.
Gordon was just going to dress and go into town unless you want him for anything, Lieutenant.
I guess you can take care of everything, Mrs. Kelso. So long, Elliot.
Bye, Dana. See you at dinner, Vivian. Huh?
Right, Gordon. Gordon's got a wonderful tan, hasn't he?
He must go over the books under a sun lamp.
The bitter Lieutenant Dana. I've heard of you.
What about your husband, Mrs. Kelso? And your brother?
Sit down, Lieutenant. Oh, no, that one's wet over here. I'll stretch out if you don't mind.
I'd be silly if I did mind.
Thank you. You didn't take my husband seriously, did you, Lieutenant?
Well, he seemed pretty serious about it.
He did. Well, you know how it is with someone that old.
No. How is it?
Would you like to rub some sun oil on my back?
I'd love to, but I won't. What about your brother? Anything to it?
Steve's not very much good. Never could take care of himself. He's one of the reasons I married Franklin.
What are the others?
Obvious.
I like the reasons why he married you better.
Well, I got a response.
And there's nothing in your brother's threats?
No, I'm sure of it.
Maybe I'd better ask brother.
And then are you coming back and rub my back?
There won't be much sun by then.
Well?
I know the pay is good, being Mrs. Franklin Kelso. But tell me, is it hard work?
If I told you, Dana, would you... No, you wouldn't.
Oh, I guess I wouldn't. Goodbye, Mrs. Kelso.
Yeah?
You should remember me, Farley.
I do. You worked me over about 3 years ago. You didn't get anything out of me, Dana.
Oh, maybe I'll have more luck the next time. Can I come in, or should we talk for your neighbors?
You can come in, Dana.
Nice apartment.
Thanks.
I know your decorator. He does calendars for pool rooms.
Yeah, same old Dana, same jokes. Sit down. Drink?
Not with you. Old man Kelso says you've been shooting off your mouth about killing him, Farley.
Yeah, he's in his second childhood.
I saw his second childhood. She says there's nothing to it either.
Then why bother me?
How about that house you took an option on?
I've been looking for a place, yeah.
What's with the yacht?
Nothing serious.
Nothing serious. Come here, punk.
Lay off me, Dana.
This smells like a game, and I don't like anybody playing games with me. In particular, a cheap hood living off his sister. Here's a string around your finger to remind you.
I don't have to take that anymore, Dana.
Then don't reach in your pockets when I talk to you. What your sister married don't build you up with me at all, Farley.
If you didn't have that badge, you wouldn't be so easy with your hands, tough guy.
If I'm tough, it's because crime and guys like you have made me tough. I don't like your apartment, Farley. Don't give me any cause to come back. I thought it over on the way back to the station, and I didn't like it. The deal was giving forth a very ripe odor, but I couldn't localize it. The inspector shared the same headache.
I don't know, Lou. Use your own judgment, I guess. What do you think?
I don't know either. We haven't got enough to be sure. I guess we better put a tail on Farley for a few days.
All right. Take Metzger for it.
Okay, I'll send him out.
And don't take any chances on a thing like this, Lou. Kelso's a big man. If he gets knocked off, we're not going to look good.
We'll look a lot better than Kelso.
Very comforting.
I sent Metzger out to stay with Farley and tried to forget about the Kelso family. The old man was easy, but at midnight that night, in my room, I was still having trouble with Vivian. Yeah? Oh, Metzger. You what? You lost Farley? How long ago? 2 hours. Well, why didn't you call me before, you... All right. No. Go on into the station, if you can find it. I'll go out to the Kelso place. And Metzger, great work. It was almost 1 when I pulled into the long driveway. And it took a lot of banging on the door to bang up the butler. This time I didn't wait for the guide service, but took off for Kelso's room alone. Did I mention that Kelso's room was an overnight hike from the front entrance? Well, it was, and I didn't encounter any of the settlers along the way. I paused outside the door of the man guarded by a tin suit of armor. Something was missing from the empty soldier, but I couldn't place it. Mr. Kelso? Are you awake, Mr. Kelso? Mr. Kelso? All the lights were on in the room, and Mr. Kelso was in bed. Then I knew what was missing from the tin soldier outside. It was the spear. Sticking straight up in the air, it was pinning Kelso to the bed. And his $9 million life had run out in a thin, red trickle.
Technicians all through upstairs, Lou?
Just about, Inspector. They got some very pretty pictures, but not much else.
No prints on the murder weapon?
Too smeared to be any good for anything. Get anything out of the butler?
Says he was in a clinch with the maid all evening.
Did you check?
Yeah, she says yes. Must want to hold her job pretty bad to be in a clinch with him.
Yeah, like necking a quick frozen salmon. Mrs. Kelso and Elliot show up yet?
No, not yet. Butler said they went out about 10.
And the murder was around midnight. How about little brother, Farley?
Well, nothing on him yet. We got out a broadcast on him. Should hear something if he hasn't skipped. Looks open and shut against him.
Sure, open and shut. Open and shut.
Now, don't make things complicated, Lou. I'm going upstairs.
I'll wait for you. It's not so pretty, I want to go back. I prowled around downstairs. The library with the expensive first editions that Kelso had never read and never would. The dining hall with the Italian masters on the walls that Kelso had never really seen and never would. The whole huge place for entertaining the friends he had never really had. And never would. Then I heard someone at the front entrance.
Hello? Who's here?
What's happened? How are you, Alia?
Oh, Lieutenant.
Dana.
Mrs. Kelso. Have a bright and gay evening.
We saw the police cars outside. What's wrong?
One thing at a time. There's nothing wrong that you can do anything about. Care to tell me where you both were this evening?
Well, of course not. We went to a drive-in movie. Mr. Kelso didn't feel up to it, so I took Vivian.
And how long were you there, Elliot?
Why, it was a little after 10 when we got there, and after 12 when we left. Isn't that about it, Vivian?
Yes. What is this, Dana?
Somebody saw you when you drove in and when you left?
Well, I think so, yes.
The movie is close to here?
Fairly close.
Walking distance?
What is this?
You can both give me the plot of the movie?
Well, I think so. It was the one about the talking mule who Francis goes to the races. You want a resume?
It's after 2 now. You left the movie at 12?
We had a few drinks.
And people saw you having the drink?
Yes.
Look, Dana...
I imagine you both can hazard a guess as to what this concerns.
My husband?
Somebody threw him a spear. He caught it. You're now the sole possessor of $9 million.
So he did do it.
Who did do what?
Nobody.
You'd have trouble convincing the late Mr. Kelso.
Can I see him?
He's not very nice to look at. How bad do you want to see him?
Not very.
Dana, can I take her into the study?
Well, if that's the best place you can think of, go ahead.
Come on, Dick.
Mrs. Kelso.
What, Dana?
This new job, managing $9 million, it may be tougher than the last one.
It's possible. But, Dana, don't let it keep you up night.
I was standing there wondering how it'd be to have Vivian Kelso keep me up nights when someone came down the stairs on very flat feet. Inspector Eddie Sherman.
I got something, Lou.
What?
One of the prowl cars outside just picked up a flash. They grabbed Steve Farley trying to get on a bus for out of town.
That's handy. Makes you look good, Inspector.
Yeah. But Lou, if it ever gets out that Farley ventilated his brother-in-law after Kelso asked us for protection...
I was just given some sound advice.
Yeah?
Don't let it keep you up nights. Let's go.
That's not much of a story, Farley.
That's all the story I got for now.
That you don't remember anything from 10 last night until they picked you up getting on a bus 4 hours later.
That's it, Dana.
No.
And you're happy about your prospects. Inspector, take the boys out and give me some time alone with them, huh?
Well, I don't know, Lou. There's going to be some expensive lawyers in this case.
Just quiet conversation, Inspector.
I'm warning you, Inspector. Dana's stuff don't go with me anymore. You're not fooling with some kid. I know my...
Shut up. All right, come on, boys. Oh, Lou, quiet conversation.
You don't remember anything.
I told you, Dan, and if you think that you can... What are you going to do?
Quiet conversation. Reminiscence. I knew a real smart head a few years back got picked up on a murder rap. He was innocent, had an airtight alibi. But he waited until his trial to spring it.
What happened?
In the meantime, his alibi got hit by a car. They burned the real smart head.
What's it got to do with me?
Another case. Real shrewd operator went on trial for a murder his partner committed. Just to throw the cops so far off the trail they'd never catch up. He had an airtight alibi, too.
What happened?
His partner shot the alibi. The shrewd operator got 10,000 volts.
I guess you think you're scaring me.
You're pretty stupid if I'm not.
Now listen, Dana, I told you that...
Come on, talk! Where were you tonight? If you got an alibi, spill it. You're 10,000 miles out on a limb, Buster. What happens when it gets sawed off?
Please let me alone, Dana. Let me think.
Let you think? That could be days. Where were you tonight?
All right. All right, just let go of me.
Give.
I was in a Turkish bath tonight from 10 to around 1.
The guy that owns it left town right after. He's coming back for the trial.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
What are you going to do with me?
Bait a trap.
Oh, Lou.
Yeah, Inspector?
The Kelso lawyer is on the phone. Wants to know what the charge is on Farlinger.
Tell him no charge. We're sending him home.
Lou!
Tell him, will you, Inspector? I'll give you the reasons in a minute.
You know what you're doing, Lou?
I think so, Inspector. I think so. I got a nose for these things. Inspector Sherman took some more persuading. But in the end, we let Steve Farley go home. I figured to give him a half an hour and then go after him. I did. But when I got to Farley's place at the Gramercy, I'd figured it too close. I got to Farley's door fast and put my shoulder to it. That was my mistake.
Oh.
The gun butt didn't catch me square, and I've got a hard head. I went down, but not out. There was no hurry. I knew where I could find the one that slugged me. I crawled over on the floor to Steve Farley. There was no hurry about him at all. He was dead. It was around 4 when I arrived for the third time at the Kelso place. It was quiet. There were a couple of crickets outside. And they were the only ones who felt like singing. I could see light through the front window, but somebody heard me coming. The lights went off as I got to the door. I gave it the shoulder treatment. I did what I was trained to do, dropped to the floor and shot back. Then I got up and found the light switch.
You're late, Ludina.
How is it? Bad?
As bad as he could make it. Don't let him get away, don't.
I'll be right back. I'll call a doctor as soon as I get him.
Don't bother, just get him.
I'll get him. I was outside, and on the broad lawn there was no place for a murderer to hide. Then I heard something. Old man Kelso had a huge aviary at one corner of the house. Something had disturbed the birds. Elliot! Not a very good place to hide, Elliot. Too noisy. There's no home for a killer, Elliot. Not even in a cage. Come on out.
Come in and get me.
Sure. Only I haven't got much time, Elliot. There's a girl needs a doctor because you shot holes in her. That wasn't very smart, Elliot. You must be about out of bullets. Try again. No bullets? I've still got plenty. And there's no one I'd rather use them on. Have one. Close? Maybe I can do better. Oh, I've got the range. I think this one has your name on it, Elliot.
No, don't shoot, Dan. I'm coming up. I'm coming up.
I changed my mind. I like it better this way, Elliot. I want you to know what Kelso felt like. And Farley. And Vivian. Hold still, Elliot.
No, don't, Dan.
No, you're not going anyplace.
Go me.
You should have stuck to bookkeeping, Elliot. It suits you better. That'll keep you quiet till I get back. I know. I wouldn't want to share the same cage with him either. There was a chill in the night air as I walked back into the house. To the beautiful widow, the beautiful heiress who was bleeding red on a white rug. I called the station. Then I bent over her, and she opened her eyes. Vivian?
Did you get him?
Yes, I got him.
You're good at that.
That's my trade.
Dana.
Yes, Vivian?
I wonder what my trade was. I never found it, did I?
Looking like you do is a trade in itself, Vivian.
Maybe. But it's not enough to make a life out of.
Take it easy. I've got a doc on the way.
I don't think I'll wait. Dana.
Yes?
How did you know?
That it wasn't your brother? Well, I've been through it 1,000 times. That makes a difference.
It wasn't so smart.
Oh, smart enough. Almost. We bring your brother to trial, he springs an alibi. Acquittal. Then if we come back to you and Elliot, your brother could confess. We couldn't try him over again.
But we didn't fool you. Do you believe me, Dana, that I didn't know Elliot was going to shoot Steve?
He had to shoot him. When I let Steve go, Elliot knew he'd spill the alibi.
Then he had to shoot me, too, when I found out.
All right. All right.
Dana.
Hurt much?
No. Dana. Steve, he's... Steve's not dead. He'll be all right.
Vivian, Steve is... He'll be all right.
I'm glad. Steve will get the money. Maybe he'll enjoy it.
Sure. Sure.
I never did. You hear me, Dana? I never did.
Vivian. Her face relaxed, and it was a beautiful face, even in death. In the distance, I could hear the wail of the oncoming siren. Late. A lot too late. And everything else was silence. I don't like killers.
You have just heard another in a series starring Dan Duryea as The Man from Homicide.
The Man from Homicide, on Tuned to Yesterday, an ABC broadcast from July 16th, 1951. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now, Edmund O'Brien stars in an audition broadcast of a series that wouldn't come to pass, The Fourth Estate. From the year he was playing a prominent role in Burt Lancaster's first movie, The Killers, this episode recorded for major network consideration and released on June 27th, 1946.
Of man's estates, there is one apart from the rest. The Fourth Estate. Starring Mark Hellinger in The Fourth Estate, a dramatization of the outstanding accomplishments of the American press. His guest tonight, film star Edmund O'Brien. The story, The Tip-Off. True fact, edited and reported by that master storyteller, veteran newsman, and motion picture producer, Mr. Mark Hellinger.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark Hellinger, speaking in tribute to the newspaper men and women of the Fourth Estate, those hard-hitting guys and gals of the nation's working press. On the Fourth Estate, you will hear their behind-the-scenes stories, strange human dramas as varied as life itself. Tonight, the Los Angeles Examiner has opened its confidential files so that we might bring you a true tale of an Examiner reporter, Jack Adams, who joined a tough gang of criminals in order to get his story. Later on, you're going to meet Jack in person. But before getting into his story, let's not forget that this week, on papers all over the country, other history-making stories are being written, a number of them deserving of far more than passing recognition. And here are several that have been acclaimed by editor and publisher, recognized authority of the newspaper world as the week's best. So let's tip our hats to...
The Antelope Valley Ledger Gazette.
For its two-fisted editorial courage in starting the investigation which resulted in this week's expose of the Ku Klux Klan in California.
The Morning Bulletin of Wade, Arkansas.
For their smashing series of front page appeals, which resulted in finding a home for every veteran returned to date.
The Chicago Sun.
For Mel Dirceleg's human interest story on the seeing eyed dog in the LaSalle Hotel fire that led a 23-year-old blind girl down 11 flights of fire escape to safety. And with that brief cross-section of the best of the week's press, we come to our story of the week, The Tip-Off, starring Edmund O'Brien in the role of Jack Adams. You meet some pretty strange people in the newspaper game, especially those crackpots who are constantly turning up around the city room with fantastic tales they insist are true and must be printed in the next edition. On rare occasions, they have something that's really hot, like this character who showed up one afternoon at the Los Angeles Examiner and tried to get in to see the editor. He was a little guy with an odd habit of twisting his head as though he were giving himself a chiropractic treatment. You could tell from the way he kept glancing around that he was pretty scared, and his voice was thin and wheezy when he talked. The kind of voice that's usually a dead giveaway for an ex-convict. Jack Adams, one of the reporters on the Examiner, was just returning to the office from an assignment when the fellow buttonholed him in the lobby.
Hey, mister.
Yes?
You work here?
Yes, why?
I'd like to see the editor.
Well, he's a busy guy right now. What do you want to see him about?
I'd like to inquire about unloading a certain piece of information.
I'm sorry, but we don't buy stories, if that's what you mean.
Well, this would be more like in the nature of a reward, you might say.
What kind of information does it involve?
It involves, you might say, some parties, which are friends of mine, who are shoving queer.
Shoving queer? Oh, you mean passing counterfeit money.
You might say, phony hairs.
Have you told the police the story?
Nah. I couldn't tell them on account of Bud and Charlie might think it was me what squealed.
And of course it wouldn't be.
Of course not. I don't do no business with cops.
Look, by the way, what's your name?
Blackie.
Oh, no, your real name.
Oh. Smith. Only, call me Blackie.
Well, look, Blackie, if these boys are friends of yours, how come you're so anxious to turn them in?
They didn't have no right mixing up business and dames, did they?
What dame?
My dame, Virginia. Well, we used to be sort of, well, you know, Only it ain't that way no more now.
Now, look, we're not interested.
But this guy, Charlie, thinks all he got to do is flash a bunch of phony dough in front of her face, and that's all it takes. Well, I don't stand for that kind of stuff, see? So I'd like to see the editor.
Well, supposing your story is on the up and up, we couldn't touch it just on your say-so. Unless, of course, one of our own reporters could check on the facts.
How do you mean?
Well, one of our reporters would have to meet these men you speak of and perhaps see some of this counterfeit being made. I don't imagine that'd be possible, would it?
It could be arranged.
It could?
Sure.
How?
Well, I'd have to introduce you first to their regular steerman, a guy named Moxie.
And then what?
Well, say, for instance, you're a pal of mine, see? I'd like to make a buy of some of the stuff. Maybe take over territory. You understand?
Yeah, I understand. What would happen if your friends didn't?
How they gonna know? You don't look no different from other guys I brung up.
Thanks. Well, I'll see what my editor thinks of the idea. When would be a good time to meet this Moxie, if we decide to go through with it?
Tonight's as good as any. Anytime after 7.
Well, let's leave it this way. I'll meet you here in the lobby at 7 o'clock. My name is Jack Adams.
Okay, Mr. Adams. About the reward.
Well, if there's a reward, I'll see that the Treasury Department learns where the tip came from.
Of course, the boys might not like it so good if they found out about you.
No, Blackie. That might make things a little rough for the both of us.
Our star, Edmund O'Brien, will return to our Fourth Estate microphone in just a moment. But now, here is Gain Whitman.
And here is the spot reserved for your first sales message. But we're holding up a deadline, so let's return to our editor, Mark Hellinger.
Our story continues, telling of a dangerous counterfeit ring and the part played by a Los Angeles reporter, Jack Adams, in exposing their activities. A member of the gang, known as Blackie, had made contact with Adams at the newspaper and promised to lead him to the counterfeiters. After getting a green light on the story from Jim Richardson, his city editor, Adams made a phone call, and shortly before Blackie was due to arrive, a couple of men showed up.
Your name, Adams?
Yes.
I'm Graham, Treasury Department Secret Service.
How are you?
Now, this is Frank Conway, my partner.
Hello? Glad to know you, sir. Hey, pull up some chairs, Frank.
The agent in charge said that you telephoned about a counterfeit contact, Mr. Adams.
Yes, a fellow who calls himself Blackie. He promised to introduce me to a gang who are making phony half dollars. Does that sound like anything?
It might. Los Angeles has been flooded with counterfeit halves for over 3 months now. We haven't been able to make a single arrest.
Mr. Adams, whoever's making this counterfeit is an expert. It's almost impossible to tell it from the real thing.
I thought it was pretty easy to tell a counterfeit coin by the ring of the metal.
That's just it. These bogus coins have almost the same ring as the genuine.
Oh. Yes, they're a pretty smooth copy. Mm-hmm. But there still are ways to recognize the counterfeit. For one thing, they're lighter than the real thing and also a trifle greasy to the touch.
I see. Well, it's almost 7 o'clock. I'd better get down to the lobby. This guy Blackie's due here any minute, and he's liable to get anxious if I'm not there.
Right. You'd better meet him just as you planned. Wherever you go, we'll be around somewhere. But don't recognize us.
Do you think you can get away with it?
I think so. I've put on the oldest suit I could find, and I once did a story on sideshows. I'm hoping I can remember enough Connie talk to sound like one of the boys.
Okay. Good luck, Adams. And remember, no matter how rough the play gets, you're on your own.
This here's the place, Mr. Adams.
Some dive. But you want to watch that mister stuff, Blackie? Slip like that inside and we'll both be dead pigeons. Better call me Jack.
Oh, yeah, sure, Jack.
Okay, Blackie, it's your part. Let's go in.
Hiya, Blackie. Where you been keeping yourself?
I've been around.
Yeah? What happened to Virginia?
She's been sort of working on a new job.
Yeah?
Say, babe, see anything of Moxie tonight?
Sure, he's sitting over there in one of the booths.
Oh, thanks. Come on, let's shove back. Excuse me, babe.
Sure.
Here he is. Hiya, Moxie.
Hello, Blackie. I thought you wasn't going to show.
I'd like you to meet a pal of mine, Moxie. This is Jack.
Pleased to meet you.
Sit down.
You know, I ain't seen Jack here in quite a while. I just happened to bump into him again this afternoon.
Yeah, it has been quite a hitch, Blackie. Let's see. I ain't seen you since the fair at Dago.
That's right. That's when it was, the fair at Dago.
And what was you doing in Dago, Pally?
I'm playing a rube, same as us, Moxie. He's a right gee, I tell you.
I wasn't asking you, Blackie.
If it makes any difference, I used to shill on the Midway.
Yeah, no offense, Pally. Only sometimes Blackie opens his trap when he ain't asked.
Blackie, you found him, all right, fellas. What are you going to have?
Make mine a double shot.
Okay.
Yeah,
same.
Okay, coming right up.
What brings you to L.A., Pally?
Huh? Oh, just casing around for a way to turn affairs buck.
Yeah, Moxie. Jack here tells me he's got a few $100 he'd like to put to work. So I was thinking...
You was thinking what?
Well, maybe Bud and Charlie
here
might
you
be
are,
into...
Fellas. That'll be $150.
Yeah, take them all out of this.
That's 150 out of 2.
Never mind. You can keep the scratch.
Thanks.
Hey, look, baby. As long as you got some change there, break this hair for me, will you?
Yeah, okay, Moxie. Thanks.
Well? Oh, what do you think, Moxie?
About what?
About Bud and Charlie being interested in Jack here.
I don't know. Maybe they might. That is, if it's like you say it is, Blackie. But if it ain't...
What's with this double talk? If you guys got a deal on and want to chew it over alone, it's okay by me. I'm going to blow.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Moxie don't mean nothing. He gets a little liquor in him. He sounds off like that.
Nothing personal, Pally. After all, I don't know nothing about you. Okay, so Blackie says you're on the inside. You used to shill at the Dago Fair. That's what Blackie says. Well, I like to find out for myself. So I find out, and, well, now we can talk business. Only not here.
Okay. Let's duck this joint. Where do you want to go?
Maybe we could take them up right now to meet Bud and Charlie, huh?
There you go, shooting off your face again. You know what Bud and Charlie thinks of strangers nosing around their setup? Or is it maybe Virginia you're interested in seeing?
Captain, what's she done to me?
Okay, forget it. If you're going to have a confab, we better go up to my hotel. We can pick up a pint on the way.
Why don't I just buy one now? They'll sell me a bottle at the bar, won't they?
Yeah, sure. You got enough bucks, they'll sell you the joint.
Ah, you see, Moxie, you've got that guy all wrong.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, Jack, you better make that a couple of pints.
Come on, answer.
Treasury Department, Secret Service.
This is Conway. Give me the agent in charge.
Stand by. Yes?
This is Conway, Chief.
How does it look?
Red hot. Adams is with one of the gang and Graham's tailing him.
Anyone we know?
And how? A pretty rough baby.
Well, stick close and do your best.
We're going to need help, Chief.
Okay, I'll get him out at once.
5th and Town Street. I'll be on the corner.
Yeah. Take this last shot of mine if you want.
Yeah. Don't mind if I do.
Now, about that dough deal.
Oh, yeah. Blackie here says you got some bucks you like to put down on a good thing.
Yeah, that's what he tells me, Moxie. 500 clams.
Yeah, I'm looking for a setup, but it's got to be sure and it's got to be fast. I'm not interested.
You happen to notice the half a buck I give the dame to change back in the bar?
Oh, not especially.
Yeah, take a look at this one. Take a good look.
What about it?
What about it, he said. How do you like that, Moxie?
Hey, well, Pally, it just so happens it's a phony.
Yeah?
Yeah, and so is the other one.
Huh. Oh, you sure could have fooled me.
Hey, try dropping it on the table. Go on.
Sounds like the genuine McCoy.
Now, take it from me, Pally. You're dead wrong. Here, pick it up and rub your fingers over it. Feel how slick it is?
Yeah, like the metal is just a little greasy.
Uh-huh. And it's the only giveaway. And you gotta know what you're looking for to spot that. That's a sure thing, Pally. And you can buy them from us for half what the government charges.
Sure. See how easy it is? Why, even a baby can pass.
Okay, but how do I know you can deliver?
You just give us the dough, and me and Blackie will give you as many as you want. All wrapped up in rolls, just like they came from the bank.
Oh, no, nothing doing. When I turn over my dough to make a buy, I like to see what I'm getting. I like to see what the setup is all the way, in case I want some more.
Sure, Moxie. The guy's putting up the dough, he's got a right to meet button shop.
But they don't like to handle it that way, I tell you.
Look, what do you take me for? Either I case the setup or we don't operate. That's it.
Okay, Pally, don't get sore. Just take a little ride. Let's see Bud and Charlie.
Charlie, open up.
Who is it?
It's me, Moxie.
Just a minute. All right, come on.
Hey, just a minute. What is this? I thought you were alone.
It's just Blackie and a pal of his.
Yeah, Charlie's a pal of mine.
Close that door, you fool.
Oh. Hello, Virginia.
What's the big idea, Blackie? Didn't Charlie tell you never to show up around here? What right do you got coming here anyhow?
You shouldn't want to talk that way, Virginia. I didn't come to see you. Moxie, me got business here with Charlie.
Yeah, I can imagine any business you might have. You never had hold of more than 2 bits at one time in your life, and that you had a bum off of me.
You shouldn't ought to talk that way, Virginia.
Look, Charlie, this is on the level. Blackie's friend, he's got a chunk of dough, and he'd like to make a buy.
Keep your mouth shut, Moxie. You're drunk again. Didn't I tell you never to come here when you were drunk? I don't like it. And I don't like strangers.
What do you want to do that for? What are you slapping me around for? Jack here's a right gee. He's an old Connie friend of Blackie's.
I don't care who he is. I told you to bring nobody here.
He's got 500 bucks. Ain't that reason enough?
Oh, you dirty...
Look, mister. I didn't come here to get mixed up in any hassle. The boys brought me up to talk a little business.
That is, if you're interested. Well? Okay, sit down. I got no beef with you. These punks make me sore. Told Moxie to lay off the bottle and look at him. It's no good in our work. I never touch it myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's on your mind?
Huh? The boys give me the pitch, and it looks okay. Only, I'm no rube. I like to do business direct. I like to know all the odds.
Yeah? Such as what?
Well, I don't go for any chicken feed arrangement. This thing is as good as it looks. I'd like to take over a territory and play it across the board.
Did they show you how easy it was to shove the stuff?
Yeah. Moxie made a pass in the barn. It looked pretty simple. But I'd like to try it myself before I shell out any scratch.
Why, this stuff is foolproof. All you got to do is work the classier joints, like up on Gila Broadway, where they're used to getting paid in big change. But stay away from Main Street and places like that, because down there, anything over a dime is heavy dough, and they're apt to be a little cagey, you see?
Yeah. Hey, how big a stock do you have on hand?
Enough. Come on into the kitchen. I'll show you the layout.
Okay.
Hey, you better come too, Blackie. I don't want any beefs out here while we're gone.
Oh, sure, Charlie. Sure thing. I don't want to start nothing. I ain't short, Virginia.
Yeah, I know. Now, look. Don't touch nothing, because we got a new batch cooking there on the stove.
Hey, that all there is to the equipment? Just those pots and ladles?
Take a look at those molds there on the table. That's the important part. They're a perfect job of engraving.
Ooh. Yeah, it's such close work that Bud's ruining his eyes. Got to wear glasses all the time, poor guy.
That's why Bud went to pick up some automatic equipment. The finishing is all handwork right now.
Hey, how much of the stuff can you turn out?
Plenty. There's about $150 worth right there we made just tonight.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more in the boxes under the sink. You see...
Charlie!
What's the matter?
Charlie, come here, quick.
Huh? Why, Moxie acting up?
Come here, I tell you, don't ask questions.
Hey, look, Virginia, I don't get it.
There, out the window.
Hmm?
In that car by the corner, in that other car across the street. Cops.
Cops! Why, you dirty, no-good stool pigeons, what kind of a frame is this?
It's Blackie. I told you not to let him near the place. Get him, Moxie. Don't let him get out.
No, you don't, Blackie. All right, Blackie, give. Who is this rat?
I tell you, he's a pal of mine, Charlie. You gotta believe me, fella. He's a guy I used to know in Dango at the fair.
Now, wait a minute. What's all the beef, anyhow?
Come on.
Why, you dirty scum, I remember now. When you went over to buy them bottles at the bar, you talked to somebody. I seen you.
Sure. A guy bumped a cigarette, so I gave him one.
He's lying, Charlie. He's a cop.
Look, mister, we don't stand for no double cross.
Let go my collar, you fool.
This will be the last time you'll cross any money.
Let go. Open up.
I kill him.
Don't, Charlie. Don't
get
kill
off.
Him. It's the cop.
Shut up. He's all right.
It's not worth it, Charlie. Let him go. We're trapped.
Yeah,
can't you see that?
Open up or we'll shoot.
No. No, don't shoot. We'll let you hear.
Stop her, somebody.
Let me go, you fool.
Open up.
Don't shoot. Don't.
Stand where you are, everyone.
Oh, huh? Okay, don't shoot.
We're federal agents. You're all under arrest.
Oh, take your hands off of me, cop.
Hey, what's the idea? You got nothing on us. It's a dirty frame.
Quiet, you, or we'll use cuffs. Take him on downtown,
now,
boys.
Look, I told you got nothing on me. Let go of me.
Come on, get out.
All right, I'll get you for this, Blackie. You wait and
see. Outside, come on.
Take your hands off me, will you?
You all right, Mr. Adams?
Okay, Mr. Graham.
Shoot.
Well, I'm glad to see you. You couldn't have picked a better time to get here. Things were getting a little on the warm side.
I had an idea they might. So when you passed me that note in the bar, Conway phoned for more men. We followed you on out here. Then when the rumpus began, we figured it was time to move in.
It sure was.
Well, thanks very much, Adams. From the department's point of view, this is quite a haul.
Thank you, sir. From my paper's point of view, it's going to make quite a story.
Thank you, Edmund O'Brien, and it did make quite a story. The next edition of the Los Angeles Examiner carried it on page one. Here at our fourth estate microphone is the reporter who participated firsthand in all that rough and tumble which Edmund O'Brien just reenacted. A man who can vouch for the facts of our story and add a few more to boot. Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to introduce the real Jack Adams. Take a bow, Jack. Jack Adams, I think it's about time you met Jack Adams. This is Edmund O'Brien, who did that grand job of impersonating you tonight.
Hiya, Jack. Glad to know you, Ed. You make a very convincing reporter. You ought to try it sometime.
Thanks, Jack, but I think I'd better stick to acting. Those counterfeiting pals of yours play a little rough to make good company.
Well, they were playing for keeps, Ed.
Hey, tell me, Jack, did Blackie ever get that reward he was so interested in?
Well, after a fashion, didn't he, Jack?
Yes, but not what he expected. Because he was so involved in the deal, the Treasury Department paid him only the smallest reward possible. All the counterfeit had been in halves, as you know, and that's the way they paid him off. $15 in halves.
30 pieces of silver.
That's right, Mark. 30 pieces of silver.
Well, Jack, it was a difficult assignment, and you handled it magnificently.
You certainly did. It took a lot of nerve.
Well, it just happened to go my way, I guess.
Oh, I think you're being a little too modest. According to Treasury Department officials, a great public service was rendered both by you and the Los Angeles Examiner in exposing and helping convict a dangerous ring of counterfeiters who had already cost the people of Los Angeles thousands of dollars. For the part you played in a dangerous game and your excellent reporting, I am proud to present to you, on behalf of my sponsor, the Fourth Estate's Gold Award of Merit, and also this check for $1,000 to your sponsor.
And confidentially, Jack, it's not counterfeit.
You're telling me. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, Jack. To our way of thinking, you really earned it. Thanks for the story.
Good night.
Good night. And now this is Mark Hellinger with hat in hand saying good night and reminding you that the hard-hitting guys and gals who constitute the Fourth Estate, the nation's working press, are your watchdogs of liberty. Support a free press and keep America free.
The Fourth Estate is adapted for radio by Warren Lewis with production and direction by Homer Canfield.
The Fourth Estate, on Tuned 2 Yesterday, an audition broadcast from June 27, 1946, from NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.